It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving at your desk, maybe at the gym, but you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach and see a rocket launch or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Hi, Paul Dennett here. Just letting you know that Cricket Unfiltered is now on Patreon. If you are a fan of our show and would like to support us with a few dollars each month, go to patreon.com/cricketunfiltered or click the link in the show notes on your podcast app.
Menas here. Our Patreon supporters will also get some pretty cool bonus content. Paul will be doing a series of cricket history podcasts.
And Menas will be doing long-form interviews with leading cricket personalities.
All of these shows, plus other bonus features, will be available exclusively to our Patreon supporters.
The first bonus episodes are available now. So if you want some great extra content, or if you just love the show and would like to help support us financially, please go to patreon.com/cricketunfiltered. Now, on with today's show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. I'm your co-host, Menas. Joining me this week is Paul Dennett. Paul, how are you?
Good, Menas. How are you going?
Really good. And the other panelist is my date from last Friday night, Jaleesa Apps.
No.
Jaleesa, how are you?
I was not your date.
Well, if you kind
anything,
of were.
If anything, you were my acquaintance at the award.
Well, we had a great time at the New South Wales Cricket Awards dinner. Unfortunately, Paul wasn't there. You were sort of missed by us. We did have a couple of people come over and say, oh, do we get a live podcast recording now? No one said, where's Paul? So
we had one person and then we repeated that line to literally everyone.
You sure, you know, Mitchell Stark or someone didn't come and say, where's Paul?
No, not this time.
I thought Ollie Davies did.
Yes, we actually tried to find Ollie Davies to get a photo with him, but it was past his bedtime and he'd already gone home.
He said,
but
where's Paul? I've got that brown paper bag of cash that I meant to give him.
We actually really did try and find Ollie for him.
I'm
pretty glad you didn't.
We actually genuinely did, but he had clearly been warned.
He stayed well away from me.
MJ, well away.
It was actually a great night at the New South Wales Cricket Awards dinner. The top honours went to Sean Abbott as the Steve Waugh medalist. Steve Waugh was there, and I think it was a condition of him being there that they talked about the book to open things up, because that was like the opening comment. The other winner was Rachel Haynes, who won the Alex Blackwell medal. There was a couple of problems, though, with all the Poms winning the awards. James Vince, Alex Hales and Heather Knight all won awards for being the player of their Big Bash franchises, so that was a little bit disappointing. I think, Jaleesa, there needs to be a rule where Poms are forbidden from winning awards at those nights.
This really bothered you, didn't it?
It did, yeah. It's the New South Wales Cricket Awards. I mean,
we actually did have quite a few people that had to phone their, or I guess video their responses in, because not only were they a lot of Poms that won, but a lot of the others were at IPL. So
that's right. Warner won One Day Player of the Year award.
Yeah. I'm sure there's probably plenty of times when someone like Darren Lehman won Yorkshire Player of the Year and various different Australians. Michael Bevan over there.
It didn't anger me as much as it did Manners, particularly because like Alex Hales is pretty brilliant, and so I was happy to see.
They
did look a little grim over there though, because we were all having like a great night.
And they're all in lockdown,
drinking and eating and mingling, and they're all filming in lockdown, which is pretty sad.
I have to say, all three of those players deserved their awards. Vince Ailes, Vince, former guest on this show, they're all excellent. But I think there should be some legislation brought in for next summer.
Yeah, if Australia won the Ashes 5-0 with four innings victories and one non-innings victory, Menes would be like, why didn't we get five innings victories?
That would be, definitely. And another nice moment on the night was the former New South Wales and Australian wicketkeeper Brian Tabor was inducted into the New South Wales Cricket Hall of Fame. That was quite I was very happy to be there. I've coached a lot with Brian Tabor over the years. I know Jaleesa doesn't believe I did coaching, but I used to coach in all the school holidays.
No, you coached. Brian Tabor. You were very good.
Thank you. Thank you. So
you did some good coaching.
Thank you for the encouragement. But Brian Tabor taught me a lot. He's a great man, and I was thrilled that he was recognised for his immense contribution to New South Wales cricket.
He was the incumbent, and Rodney Marsh tipped him out. Wasn't that the case in the late 60s, early 70s? A bit. Marsh was sort of the better batsman, so he got the gig.
Yeah, Tabsy didn't have a great record with the bat, but a brilliant contributed at all levels to cricket. Even post-playing, he spent a lot of time with young teams and coaching and selecting. So he has been a lifelong contributor to New South Wales cricket. Well, for this edition of Cricket Unfiltered, we're going to start off by discussing the cricket headlines. Paul, you were ahead of the game last week saying the IPL should be cancelled. It seems like that issue's really gathered speed since our last show, so we'll talk about that, the contracts that were handed out by Cricket Australia. And then to wrap things up, we've got a little bit of a sort of review of the season where we've sort of picked some of our favourite moments from the very long cricket season. Well, let's start off with the IPL. Paul, what's happened since our last show?
No, it's just devastating. It's such a sad, terrifying situation in India. Some of the worst parts are reading reputable articles in publications like the New York Times and the Financial Times of London, where they're saying that as high as the death rate is, and it may be 2,000 a day, when they've kind of cross-checked it against the what's going on at the various different crematoria, that the true death rate might be 2 times, 5 times, or even 10 times as high as it actually is. The case numbers already at levels that are almost impossible to understand are actually vastly higher than that. And my social media, I have a lot of Indians that I follow and follow me, and it's just kind of become so noticeable of all the people sort of giving contact numbers to, if you've got an oxygen cylinder, please call me.
It's really sad.
Yeah, and things like, you won't be able to get one here, but if you drive 5 hours to this city and you speak to this guy, you might be able to get one. And yeah, it's just a horrendous human tragedy. And I earnestly hope that the rest of the world gets together to give as much help to India as possible. Obviously, it's the right thing to do. And from a secondary point of view, the whole world cannot be safe from corona until everyone is safe. And this is where the current crisis is, and an action must be taken.
It's very concerning. With regards to the IPL, Ravi Ashwin's pulled out of the tournament. Adam Zampa and Kane Richardson are on their way home. Andrew Tyre's already at home, and as we record this on Tuesday, the Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison has banned all flights from India coming into Australia, and he says Australian cricket is playing in the IPL won't be prioritised. Now, this banned till the middle of May, but there's a real chance now that the Australian players, coaches and commentators that are over there for the IPL might not be able to get home.
It's a really delicate issue because, you know, if you had a family member in India who wanted to get home and couldn't, then you'd have no sympathy for the cricketers whatsoever. You'd say, you know, they've gone over there as for the money and they're not representing Australia. So
even if they were representing Australia.
Yeah, but I take a different view in the sense that I think that it's only a very small number of them. I think de facto they kind of are representing Australia in the sense that Pat Cummins has made a donation of $50,000 to the Indian charity. The response to that has been enormous, that although they are in it for their own money, they're also kind of goodwill ambassadors for Australia. I was happy that they were over there because the World Cup that's due to be in October and November meant that the Australian players were going to get great experience in Indian conditions. So my point of view would be no Australian over there should be pushed behind any of the current cricketers in the queue. But if Cricket Australia can charter a plane to get them home, if they've come from a very safe, biosecure hub, if they've been vaccinated as is the plan, if they then do their quarantine, and it's something that Cricket Australia or the players pay for, then I'd be okay with that as long as it didn't mean that any other Australian was slowed down in getting back.
I think there's no doubt that there are still going to be Australians over there, even when the cricketers come back, that have probably been waiting a really long time to be coming back.
Oh, definitely. But I'm saying those people shouldn't be made to wait any longer because of the cricketers. That if they can get the cricketers back as a total separate process to them, I think it's if they can do so and it's in a safe way, given that they'll have been vaccinated, they've been in a biosecure hub, and if Cricket Australia meet the payment for that and it doesn't cause any Australian over there to be pushed back further, then and only then I'd be okay with that.
I found Morrison's attitude in the press conference a little bit careless about the Australian cricketers. I don't think they should be given sort of special treatment, but I do think they're in a completely different situation. They are kind of representing Australia, as you said, Paul, but the politics of the situation are that the way the relationship between Cricket Australia and the BCCI is that it would have been a stunning step for Cricket Australia to say all the players can't go to the IPL. And that would have caused a lot of problems, you can imagine, down the track with negotiations with India over future tours. So they should be given an option to come home. You're right, they shouldn't get, be taking someone else's seat. But if they can get a chartered flight into the country, that should not be stopped.
Yeah, I agree.
It's very hard to go over there for doing your job and then, you know, this happens. It's part of you couldn't really foresee that it was going to be this bad a few months ago when they agreed to this.
No, not at all. Well, that's the concerning situation in India. Our thoughts and prayers go out to all the Indian fans listening, and we'll be thinking of you over this tough time.
I hope Pat Cummins, their 50,000 donation kicks off a lot of donations. It's really good of him.
All right, now more cricket news. She's playing footsies with me again, like at the New South Wales Awards dinner. Anyway.
Sorry, I've got really long legs. You don't know. You don't know the...
It's not that long.
You don't know what it feels like it feels to have long like. Legs.
Certainly don't.
That's exactly what I was saying, Paul. Paul and I are just here cramped up.
I'm stretched out. I can barely touch the floor.
Menace needs help off his seat.
All right, well,
I'm sorry, man.
That's a bit cruel.
It was too easy.
All right. Now, in the last week, the Cricket Australia contract list has been announced. 17 players were given a contract. There is some controversy around Will Pukowski and Travis Head not being offered contracts. I think that in the 17 that are listed, I would not have given Alex Carey or Kane Richardson a contract. Kane Richardson is a white ball bowler that is not even necessarily a starter in our white ball teams. And Alex Carey just keeps in the 50-over game. He's not even our full white ball keeper. So I would have taken both those two out and probably found room for at least Travis Head and probably Will Pukowski as well.
I don't see why they couldn't have had the current 17 plus a couple more. There's no limit. There's no rule that you can only have 17. I think that's the minimum. So I think that Pukowski and Head would have been worthwhile additions to it. I love how Chad Sayers has sent out a tweet, absolute disgrace that Travis Head couldn't find himself a spot on the contract list. It's kind of freeing that, you know, you've retired, now you can
fire
up on both barrels. But it's good loyalty as well. But particularly with Travis Head, I mean, looking at his numbers, he averages 39.8 in tests and 40.8 in first-class cricket. He's 27. This summer, he only got three test innings, 7, 38 and 17, so he didn't really get an enormous opportunity. I've never been a massive advocate for him, but what I watched in the Ashes in 2019 and what I've seen subsequently, I'm willing to say he might be someone who's got a long-term test future. And just looking at that he's, if you can divide his career into two halves, from 2011-12 to 2018, he averaged 35.9 with seven centuries. And then from then till now, he averages 48.9 with eight centuries. Oh, I think that those last few years are enough of an indicator to me to say he might well be someone on the up and up. I think it's a pity that he didn't get a contract.
Yeah, I agree. I think that he should have got a contract. The only 17, I mean, to me, that's just cost cutting. It's just saving money,
definitely.
You know, because you're obviously, when you're contracted to Cricket Australia, you're paid for, you know, using your image and using promotion of the game and all that kind of thing. So I'm assuming that's just a cost cutting measure, but it is.
Apparently the national contracts are about double the state contracts.
Yeah, from previous years, it's quite a small looking list. When I first opened it up, I went, okay, and where's the second page? The notable one for me was Perkowski, because I looked at that list and thought, oh, okay, so who's the other opener with Warner? It'll be Perkowski, right? If everything's going well for him, and you'd imagine that in the Ashes against England, he'll be the other opener. So I just found it really bizarre not to put him on a Cricket Australia contract now.
I agree. I can't understand why they didn't. And, you know, until he dislocated his shoulder, I mean, he was looking like he was going to be almost a lock in the side. He hasn't cemented a spot yet, but such promise, such a good record. Mm. So, yeah, I find that puzzling and a bit of a slap in the face to someone who probably doesn't deserve to have that.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm not so upset about Perkowski missing out, because I think he's got a long way to go to prove himself, and he's been in and out of first-class cricket over the last few years. But someone like Travis Head, they've invested a lot of time and experience into him over the last 3 years. He's been in and around that squad. He was vice-captain. It is a bit strange that then he would be left out. And as I said, if I was Travis Head, I'd be looking at Kane Richardson and, to a lesser extent, Alex Carey, and thinking, surely if they could find room for them, they can find room for me.
Mm.
Yeah, it was sort of a baffling one. And the thing that I found, like, there was actually quite a lot of outrage on Twitter and the social medias and such when this list came out. And I think that people sometimes look at this list and see it as the team.
Yeah, I don't.
I think people get a little bit too fired up sometimes. This isn't the team. This is just people who are paid more for using their image, promoting the game, that kind of thing. So,
and the players can get a contract when they're picked, and it doesn't affect the selectors. The selectors don't go,
no.
Oh, who's contracted?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'll pick that other
guy.
Yeah,
exactly. Oh,
he's
okay,
contracted.
Adam Zampa's contracted, so we'll put him in the side. It just doesn't. So I think people get a little bit too fired up. Whilst I think that Perkowski deserved a contract, and probably Travis Head as well, it doesn't mean they're not going to play.
Hones intimated in his press conference that, I wouldn't say regrets the right word, but he did say something that perhaps in hindsight they should have rotated Australia's quicks throughout summer. And he sort of intimated that they felt that they should have picked Pattinson in the last test match, and they missed a trick there against India.
In hindsight, he's absolutely right, but I can't criticise them, because I think if I went back through my tweets and everything I said in the lead up to the Gabba test, I wasn't calling for that. So, you know, in hindsight, it would have been the right thing to do, but it fooled me as well.
I agree. And he did say that it's about time where they take some of these decisions out of the bowler's hands. If, say, Hazelwood, Stark and come and say, no, we're right, that the selectors actually might end up having to make a call that they don't have a lot of faith in their own assessment.
Well, I thought to a degree they'd already done that. I mean, 2019, I'm sure that Mitchell Stark was saying, I'm right, pick me, and they rotated him out. And so maybe they were loath to do that again after doing it to him in 2019. They probably should have picked him at the final test in 2019 and not picked him for the final test of last summer. But as I said,
Look, I was with you. I would have picked Stark in the last test.
Yeah.
Didn't know what Rishabh Pant was going to do. Hones also spoke about his concerns with Australia not having enough test preparation for the Ashes. The way the schedule's working out, that the Australian white ball, the T20 team, could be playing in the World Cup when the Shield starts, and therefore those players that come back from the T20 World Cup will get basically no Shield cricket and possibly just one test against Afghanistan to prepare for the Ashes. And Hones did make it clear that he is concerned about that.
Reminds me a little bit of what happened in England a couple of seasons ago, where so many of the England players are in the IPL, and the Pakistan side actually played a test match in Ireland first. And then when they played the first test match, that if you looked at test matches played in, first class games played in England or Ireland, so sort of similar conditions in the lead up to the test match, several of the Pakistani players had actually more experience in the home conditions of England than the England players had. It would be unfortunate if it panned out that way, but I think with the pandemic and everything going on, this is one of these things. I just don't think you can do anything about it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And you would expect that the English team will be coming from that T20 World Cup as well, so they'll be in a similar situation preparation-wise.
Yeah, and Pakistan then did beat England in the first test of that in that series. So, I mean, as far as the Ashes are concerned, as much as I'm a patriotic Australian, if England happened to get a bit of a jump on Australia at the Gabba and you know, we created a much more competitive Ashes series than we otherwise might have had, it might end up being for the best.
Don't hold your breath on that one. All right, well, they were the cricket headlines. Let's now take a break and then we'll be back to discuss the 2021 season. You're listening to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. I'm Menes. I'm with Paul and Jaleesa. And we thought it would be appropriate to look back at the season that was 2021, the longest season in memory, the longest season, I think, in Australian cricket history. It started in September, which I think it started when Australia played New Zealand in the women's 50-over series and then concluded with the Shield final in mid-April. For me, it was a dream summer. It could have kept going as far as I was concerned, but it's over. We've got a few months off before the next season begins. And, Paul, you got a couple of highlights from the summer you want to start off with?
Well, I mean, for a start, it's just one of the most bizarre summers in history, that when you look back on it, you've got to give a lot of congratulations to Cricket Australia for making it all happen, to the Australian players, to the Indian players for playing such a big part in
it. To the New South Wales government for letting this Indian team in.
Yep. And I think to all of the to the nation of Australia, our governments, for having got us to a point of handling the pandemic better than most countries. We haven't done everything perfectly, but to have allowed crowds in to a degree throughout the whole season is a phenomenal achievement. For me, what sort of highlights what a strange situation we're in is that as we go to air, we are 27 months since the Australian men's team last played a one-day game at the Melbourne Cricket Ground. By the time that next happens, it'll be 3 years a gap. Now, part of that was because the previous summer, Australia had to go to India and it was a weird summer as well. But when you think about, it wasn't that long ago that you could bank on 60, 70, 80,000 for the MCG, and it was the highlight of the summer, Australia playing one day as the MCG, to now going to a point where we're going to have 3 years with no games there at all. It highlights what a weird summer we've had and how much the world has changed.
Yeah, we were really fortunate in Sydney that we got the whole WBBL played. There was most of the Indian white ball games were played in Sydney. We got the test match away. But that's crazy that there hasn't been a 50-over game at the MCG for 3 years.
It will be 3 years by the time they do have one, yeah.
Incredible. All right, well, Paul, start us off. What have you got from the summer?
Well, let's start with best innings. Mm-hmm. Best innings of the summer. And for me, you know, there were plenty that I enjoyed, but the one that I respected the most was Rishabh Pant's 89 not out at the Gabba to win the test match for India. And we'll keep on revisiting this match. Menes, eventually you'll probably turn my microphone off because it was a pretty painful match for Australian fans. But you've got to say, given the history, Australia hadn't been beaten there for since 88, 89, given the fact that India had never beaten Australia in Australia except for two summers ago when we had all the excuses, given the fact that India were missing basically their whole side, and that Parnes up till then had been known as a sort of guy that would come out and either play a brilliant innings or get out for a duck. He actually played a really mature innings, spliced with a bit of brilliance and a little bit of madness. But for India to actually go for the total when they, you know, they didn't need to win in order to retain the trophy. Yeah, I just think it was a special innings and one of the all-time great non-centuries that I've ever seen.
I agree. Jaleesa.
I agree with that. And I also just wanted to special mention, obviously not Test cricket, but special mention to Jack Edwards, 108 off 122 balls. I just really enjoyed in the Marsh One Day Cup final. I just really enjoyed watching him. I just thought it was a really patient, well-played innings, and it was just one of the ones that I just really just will stick out to me as something that was just full of a lot of skill.
Yeah, I agree. He's a lovely batter to watch. Tall, elegant right-hander. And that's a good pick. It's always great to see young talent emerge. My favourite innings of the summer, it's hard to choose between Smith's 62 ball, his two 62 ball centuries at the SCG. I did like the second one, and I was at both of them because he was so annoyed that he didn't do it in 61 balls. I think Marnus turned down a second that would have meant he'd broken his own record from the game before of 62 balls. But just being at the SCG with a very full house and Smith peeling off runs, Australia making a big total, just a phenomenal pair of innings from Steve Smith.
Absolutely. I mean, that's my second place as well. I bracket them together. And the fact that he's been known as not necessarily a big hitter, and yet those two innings, they're what are they, like third and fourth fastest Australian one-day centuries ever. And just some of the shots he played, it was just like the angles that he could hit the ball, it was just some of the most entertaining batting I've ever seen.
All right, now our Test player of the summer. This was unanimous between Paul and I.
Same.
Rishabh Pant.
It was the summer of Rishabh Pant.
And all the more remarkable when he didn't even get a gig in the first test. They picked Ridhiman Sahar in the first test. You know, wouldn't have thought that three test matches later, all three of us were going to say that Rishabh Pant was the player of the summer.
Yeah, incredible.
I loved his counter-attacking innings at the SCG in the third test when every sort of cricket sensibility says you just play conservative cricket, and he just came out and smashed the Aussie bowlers all over the place. Yeah. And it just put the Aussie bowlers off. They could just never recover. It certainly put Tim Bain off.
It's funny because it was going into this series, it was like we'll never know what this series could have been like with Kohli.
Mm.
And by the end of it, it was like we'll never know what this series would have been like without Pant.
Absolutely. You know, Virat who by the end?
Yeah, exactly. I would have rather Virat over Pant in the end.
Most baffling selection of the summer. And for me, it was Joe Burns for the first test. Now, I know that
he... Joe Burns at all.
And I mean, I suppose when they
picked... So it wasn't enough to bash him all summer. You have to bash him in our review.
I'm not having a go at Joe. No, this you is... Are. If you go back a few podcasts, and I encourage you all, I can't remember what you said, Paul, but I thought it was very unfair on Joe Burns to pick him.
Well, probably, yeah. I mean, I think that Joe Burns is a very, very good player. I just think that the lead-up form that he had shown meant that you couldn't possibly pick him on averages. And to be fair to him, yeah, he got a second innings 50. So probably picking him for the second test wasn't as big an error, because at least he had some form going into it. But he then did fail in the second test, got dropped thereafter. So, I think that it was a disappointing selection.
Now, Paul's got an award for worst commentator.
I'm not participating.
I'm a bit gun-shy with this one now, Paul.
I'm really gun-shy.
Who's your worst commentator?
Andrew Mensel. Oh, sorry.
I deserve that one.
Sorry, let's keep going.
Brian Lara, I think that they brought him out for the Big Bash and it just didn't look like he was all that interested. That's all. He just seemed like he was a little bit bored by the Big Bash and produced a fairly insipid performance.
Yeah, he wasn't great. I really enjoyed Merv Hughes being in the ABC commentary box for the MCG test. Loved hearing Swerve and Mervin on the mic.
So why have you gone gunshy, Manners? Normally you'd have a list of about 800 that you'd bag. Well, you're trying to curry favour now. You want to...
yeah, I want to get a job commentating. I actually sort of thought about this. There was actually no commentator that stood out to me, apart from Kristen Beams, as being not great. I can't give a fake award out. I thought they were all really good apart from the player I just named.
Most frustrating player of the summer. For me, it was Pekowski, not through really any of his own fault, but
after all the travails he's had, and then to have a yet another concussion at the start of the summer, and then to finally get a game to score a very fluent 60. There was a really touching interview with his dad that was just so glorious to hear. And then to have that dislocation of the shoulder, and then to be kind of on the sidelines yet again, as I said at the start of the show, very frustrating, not through his fault, but hopefully we'll still see a fine career out of him.
Jaleesa, do you have a frustration of the summer?
Yep. Tim Payne.
Oh, yes, load up.
Tim Payne was my frustration of the summer because he was getting frustrated and it was making me frustrated and it was stressing me out. Not be like the sledging and all that aside, that, you know, probably was all a bit of an overreaction at the time, but more just the fact that he was just lost his way completely as a leader and just was getting so agitated, and you could almost see he could, and he dropped so many balls because it was like he was too tense. Like you could see that he was just too tense trying to catch, and to the tension in his body was, you could just feel it through the TV, and I hated watching every second of Tim Payne.
Oh, I love that answer. We'll be seeing Tim Payne at the Chapel Foundation dinner in a couple of weeks. We can chat to him about these issues.
Look, I'm sure he'll be thrilled to hear our thoughts.
Sure, he won't be listening. But if he is, hello, Tim.
Hello, Tim.
Come and say hi at the dinner.
I'm nicer in person.
My frustrating player of the summer. I did actually wonder, like, what if Payne said to me, aren't you the guy that thinks I should be replaced?
God, you think high of yourself.
No, I don't think he'll actually say
that. You're laying in bed going, oh, but I wonder, God, what, imagine if he said that to me and then I said this and he said
no,
this.
No, I didn't play it out like
and then,
that.
And then he asked me to be a selector and then.
Oh, man, can I have your number
can you
so
coach?
I can just
I
reach
hear
out?
Coach.
And then he writes his autobiography, you know, Tim Payne and Andrew Menzel, together we conquered the world.
Our Ashes victory.
Yes.
Why I retired.
No, but I was just thinking, like, if I went up to him and said, g'day, like, really friendly, and he's just like, aren't you the guy that wants me to get out of my job? And I'd just be like, I would just, like, totally cave. Oh, no, Tim. No, you're doing a great job.
That's great.
Oh, it's just for the show.
Will you come on?
Please give me a couple of minutes of your time. All right. Now, my frustrating player of the summer is Matthew Wade. What annoys me about Wade is he was in form all summer. He was batting probably as good as anyone in the national setup, just didn't score any runs. So he's out of the team, he's out of the contract list, and my man's career at the top level may be coming to an end. All right, Paul, now, after your worst commentator of the summer, you've tried to redeem yourself with your top three commentators of the summer.
What I should say, the spirit of this show in the early days was the commentary critique was your favourite thing where you bagged everyone. Suddenly I'm out of step with that. I'm in trouble for having
No, Paul. You've said it now, Paul. You just got to back yourself.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Brian Charles, lift your game. But my top three were all from Channel 7, and I saw a lot more of the Channel 7 coverage this year than ever before. And I was quite impressed with it, but just Tim Lane, Ricky Ponting and Alison Mitchell, those three to me, just all class. Ponting for an ex-player, often a bit sceptical about ex-players getting into the commentary box. I think, you know, come on, what can you bring? But Ponting, just his analysis of the game is second to none. And Mitchell and Lane, for me, just give it class and gravitas, and they have the smooth, professional, knowledgeable style that I love. There were others. Well, I think Sonny Gavaskar was an honourable mention. I think when he's not under the kind of control of the BCCI, he presents a really good alternative voice. So, yeah, those three were my favourites.
Well, they're good choices. What about you, Jaleesa? Any favourite commentators?
Yeah, my favourite's, like, and long-running favourite is Lisa Stelaker.
Oh, good one.
I just always think that she says things when they're needed. She doesn't over... My biggest pet hate in a lot of sporting commentary is screeching for no reason. Like, it just annoys me.
Have you heard me commentate?
Yeah, I can feel the passion behind you though, Menace. You're actually screeching because you're that excited. I just feel like Lisa just adds this really calm, like, intelligent cricket mind to a lot of commentary, and I really like it.
Well, that's lovely.
What do you think of Danny Morrison?
He's Danny Morrison.
Good.
I love Danny Morrison. I think the New Zealand
fast bowler who commentates in the IPL. Oh, the double D's. Oh, he's no, out I for half a dozen.
Out. I know.
Oh, it's a maximum.
Yeah, I love him. He's fantastic.
I think he's
Look, there's a place for it almost in the IPL though.
Yeah.
Because it is also over dramatic and like there's a lot of build. Yeah.
He means well, but he's just not. He's not for me.
Yeah.
Well, I don't really have a top three commentators of the summer.
He's going to list every single commentator.
No, I'm just going to actually say that this summer, for some reason, the commentators did not either anger me or make me particularly happy at any point. I was very ambivalent towards them, which is not great for this podcast. But I have to say, I thought Warnie had a bad summer in the commentary box. I think Warnie just seemed to be wheeling out, you know, cliche after cliche. He didn't seem interested. So I wouldn't have him in my top three commentators. So, yeah, Warnie's probably the only one.
Warnie, can say what he
not
wants.
Not in that top three. Paul, you have the first-class team of the summer. Stats are the only criteria. 7 batters, 4 bowlers, chosen by average minimum of 500 runs or 20 wickets. So you've got Pekowski and Inglis at the top of the order?
I'd always put them in top of in batting order, in order of averages for the summer, okay, in first-class cricket. So Pekowski, Inglis, Enriquez, Labuschagne, Green, Renshaw and Head. So Pekowski averaged 118, down to Head averaging 57. And the next one, if he'd made it, was Sean Abbott, who, with an average of 57.0, would have been 8th best. And then in terms of the 4 bowlers, if you just said, who are the best 4 bowlers in terms of bowling average minimum 20 wickets, I don't think many people would have picked Jack Wildermuth as number one, but bowling average of 21.2, Jackson Bird, 22.5, Pat Cummins, 23.2, Scott Boland, 24.0, Michael Nisa would have just missed out. He would have been in 6th place, 24.3. Mitchell Swepson, 26.8. And Hazelwood, I missed him as well. He would have been 5th place at 24.1, so he would have just missed out as well. So some of the
flawed system.
Oh, it's just it just is what it is. I'm not saying this is how we select the side. Just saying
it's how you'd like to select the side.
No. I'd allow more than just averages. But I'm just saying, just looking at the whole season, just in terms of best averages, these are the people who had them.
I don't know, stats boy. It's all looking a bit weird to me.
No, but this is as I said, it is what it is.
I've got a question for you, Jaleesa.
Okay.
Who is going to make more test runs, Matt Renshaw or Will Pekowski?
Will Pekowski, if he stays fit.
Well, it's no preface.
What, so I can't say what. So if he gets,
he might not stay fit. Like who do you think from now is going to make the most test runs?
Will Pekowski.
Okay,
me too.
Paul?
Me too.
All right. I still think Renshaw. He's going to have a very successful test career.
Really?
Yep.
He may well. And some of the other interesting numbers for the year that, so some of the test players, Harris averaged 52, that's not bad. Payne 40, Wade 38, Steve Smith only averaged 37 across all first class cricket.
Terrible year.
Warner 27, Burns 23. The last two bowling I didn't mention. Lyon averaged 31 for the summer. So he had a poor test summer but a good shield summer. So 31's pretty good. But the interesting one, Mitchell Starc of 44.6, a pretty forgettable summer for him.
Now, best matches of the summer, moments that will stay with me for years to come. I've mentioned this game before. I'll mention it again. The Sydney Thunder semi-final defeat of the Brisbane Heat in the WBBL semi-final at North Sydney Oval. The Thunder were defending 143 and the double defending champs were 4 for 119, only needing 25 to win the game and get a spot in the final. And they lost 6 for 12. Hannah Darlington was part of that collapse, bowling very well, and she did well in the final. But just an excellent, exciting night at North Sydney Oval. It was really magical the way the Thunder turned that game around, and the crowd was into it, and it was just brilliant. So yeah, love that one.
Jaleesa? My best match of the summer was the final of the Sixers and the Scorchers in the BBL. Just for, not necessarily because the game was the closest game or anything, but more because of the feeling it was like to be there after COVID, because it was sort of the first big sporting event where you'd actually had a pretty packed crowd. I think it was ended up being 75%, I think they allowed it. And it just felt like we'd made it over this really awful period.
That's how I felt about that game I spoke about in the WBBL.
Yeah.
It was that kind of feeling that we were out of this malaise.
Yes, and everyone was like so excited, and it was just everyone was singing and getting into the cricket and cheering every wicket and drinking and having fun, and it just felt like how good is Australia? I guess that's exactly how I felt like it summed up. Nice. And I just really liked the feeling it gave me. And also I took people who hadn't, like, didn't even know who were playing, and they had such a good time. So it was just so nice to bring.
Speaking of people that don't know cricket, when are we going to address the fact that I was 100% right about Robert Fairhead?
No, that's coming up. Okay, that's coming up and can't let it go.
All right, we'll let that go. Right.
You're kidding, Harry.
Right again, manners. Paul, what's your favourite match of the summer?
Mine was a game in the Big Bash on the 23rd of December, Adelaide versus Brisbane Heat. And again, don't endorse gambling, but I had a small bet on Adelaide. And
somebody doesn't endorse gambling.
They promptly made 150, and then the Brisbane Heat absolutely collapsed. They were 5 for 66. And I remember looking and seeing that the Brisbane Heat had gone out to 420-1. And I remember thinking, I probably should put, a dollar on that just to kind of secure my situation.
So you put 20.
I put nothing on it. And all of a sudden, James Baisley scored 49 not out of 31. And Brisbane got to the point where off the final ball, they needed 2 to win. They scampered through for a single. Steckerty dived in and was home, and therefore it should have been a super over. So they were on the verge of 50-50 of winning, but his bat just before the line bounced up and the ball hit the stumps and he was run out. And it was like, wow. I'm actually glad I didn't have that dollar on them at 400-1 because I would have lost it and I won my bet. But it was what an emotional roller coaster. And it was the Big Bash at its best. It was bonkers but brilliant.
I have a runner-up for my favourite match of the summer. It was on Boxing Day. They played the Boxing Day test, then they had one Big Bash game, then they had another one starting about 9:30 p.m. It turned out to be an absolute corker.
Yeah, I remember that one.
At the Metricon Stadium, I think.
Yeah.
The Stars v. the Sixers.
Finished at like 1 in the morning.
Finished 1 in the morning, which was my dream. I love late-night cricket. It's so lovely being up late at night and there's cricket on, and especially that was being played in Australia. Sixers needed 20 off the last over and they got there with one ball to spare. Dan Hughes, 96 not out. That was just an amazing day because you'd had the sort of flat first day of the test and then we had an amazing couple of Big Bash games. So love that. Keep it going every year, non-stop cricket on Boxing Day. To end our review, let's end on a negative. What was the worst moment of the summer?
Let's end on a negative.
Well, for me, there was the two that stand out was the SCG Mohammed Siraj racism controversy and the fact that throughout the whole summer Channel 7 were engaged in legal action against Cricket Australia, that we covered it at the time, that you don't want your main broadcaster at loggerheads with you. Ultimately, the cricket delivered in the end, and so I think that was, you know, I suppose if we look back and think if it had been a 4-test summer of 4 boring draws or nothing really happened, then maybe cricket wouldn't be in as good a position. The fact that it really took a while, but it really did captivate the nation. And as you said, Menas, in many ways it captivated the nation because we were honouring the brilliance of the away team. And sometimes that's the best summer, that when you kind of get familiar with the opposing team and start to think, wow, how good is this? All these people are now household names. But it was disappointing that there was legal action going throughout the season.
Any negatives for you, Jaleesa?
I'd agree with both of those. The racism controversy was just a really ugly look, and the legal action was not good for cricket nor for broadcasters. So, yeah, I have nothing really further to add. I agree.
Well, all I'm going to add to that is my worst moment of the summer. It's not one moment, but it's the way the Australian cricket team did not show solidarity with the BLM movement. That was a real disappointment for me. Other than that, though, I have to say it was an amazing summer. I just want to shout out the Queensland Fire, the Queensland women's team that won the WNCL for the first time in their history. Tremendous achievement. And Georgia Redmayne leading the team to victory. They're my team of the summer, along with the Indian Tourists. Well, that's it for our review of the summer. We'll take a quick break, then we'll be back with Can't Let It Go. You're listening to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast, and it's the last segment, Can't Let It Go time, where we discuss that little bit of cricket news we just can't let go through to the keeper. So, Jaleesa, you've got something on your mind?
Yes, yes, yes. And, oh, I am just giddy with bragging rights. Let me tell you, my chest
what
is puffed
are you
out.
On?
My tail is up. I am excited. So, Robert Fairhead. He is a long-term listener, loyal listener of the show. We love interacting with him. Robert sent in last week that his reliable niece, I have no question over that after hearing all of this, his reliable niece had said that she was watching a grade cricket game.
First factual error.
In Sydney. Well, I'm talking. Pipe down over there, love. you'll get your chance. So in a grade cricket game, she had been watching and I don't know if she specified where as a bowler or just a fieldsman, but caught the ball. So that was the batsman out and then turn around and did a run out. And so basically both batters were out. She was savaged on this show last week by
She's 1,000% wrong.
Just stop. She was savaged on this show and said, didn't happen, didn't happen, definitely didn't happen. And I said, whoa, hang on. Were you there? Do you know that happened? No, it just didn't happen. It didn't happen. And I put forward the case that perhaps she wasn't watching grade cricket. Perhaps she was watching another form of cricket in Sydney, but I believed that the incident did happen. No, there were several ridiculous explanations given. One of them was like, oh, well, maybe it was the end of the innings and she saw both of them go.
Which is very feasible.
She knows what she's watching.
She doesn't.
She knows what she's watching.
She has no
idea
what you're talking about.
So, let's just hear the audio of that.
Robert, no offence to your niece, but I think she's 1,000% wrong. That did not happen. It just can't happen. It's not a rule. You can't do that.
What? Are you really going to question what she saw?
Yeah, I think she
saw
it.
Were you there?
I think she saw it.
What?
I think she saw the catch and the player turned around and threw the stumps down and the niece thought two people were out, but it wasn't. It was just the core batsman.
Thank you for explaining what she saw, Menace.
Well, but it just never happens.
That's how do you know that this didn't happen?
Unless they're playing like crazy cricket or something. There's no rules.
Maybe they were. Maybe they were playing a revised rules.
Revised
I
rules,
don't
well.
Know. But
in saying that,
just categorically sitting there and going, this did not happen.
To be fair.
I will not be hearing that.
He wasn't 100% sure. He was 1,000% sure.
I'm 1,000% sure your niece is lying about this. I will say, though.
Your niece is deliberately slandering the good game of cricket, Robert. That's what we'd like to get.
Maybe we could investigate. If you could send the details, Robert.
I would 100% encourage that.
Of the game,
yeah.
Then I'll look it up on My Cricket and see, you know, what happened. But
we will contact the club if necessary.
In saying that, I commentated on some women's regional cricket, and no one told me that there was more than 11 allowed to play. So I was looking at, and this batter came out. And I was like, she's not even in the team, and they were like, oh no, she's the 13th player who's batting.
So is so it maybe possible? This is it possible that you are wrong?
No,
he's not.
No,
he's not wrong.
No,
he's right.
It's wrong, right, that this didn't happen.
No, it didn't happen.
Can't happen. No.
Can't happen. So,
but perhaps they were playing, I don't know, a revised.
No. Robert's niece is wrong.
Robert, I'm with your niece.
Wrong.
I'd like
Thanks for subscribing, Robert, but she is wrong.
Robert, I am of the open mind in this room that perhaps they were playing some sort of variation or they changed the rules for some sort of reason. I don't know. Okay. Maybe she wasn't. You know what I think has happened here? Was she watching Sydney grade cricket?
But
she might have been watching another.
Bora.
Yeah, I don't know. Was she? No, but she might
Robert's
have been watching.
Robert's asking, if this could happen in Test cricket. Robert knows this couldn't happen
in
Test
cricket. No, it can't happen in
Test
cricket.
He's a very intelligent man. It can't happen in Test cricket. He knows this is a farcical question.
Maybe what happened was that if I caught someone and I realised that the non-striker was also out of their crease, I'd probably break the bails as a bit of a joke.
Yeah, or you just you reflex as you might.
But
do
they
it.
Didn't both walk off, no. unless it was the last wicket of the match of the innings, and they both walked off anyway. But
and so she thought they were both out.
Yeah.
I just want to know, was she watching a Sydney grade cricket final? Maybe that'll open up more possibilities for us.
Robert,
maybe she was watching
something
else. Get your
niece to get in touch, and I'll run through the rules with her.
I just won't hear her slandered. So after that, Robert has written in again and said, right. My reliable niece has forwarded details of the game in question. It wasn't grade cricket, as I suspected. My mistake, in brackets. Last man stands, Eastern Suburbs, Div 6 on the 11th of April. The double dismissal took place in the second innings, caught and run out. So as I suspected, it did happen. It did happen. It was just in another form of cricket
but it's not cricket. It's Mickey Mouse cricket, which is
no problem
with
if
the
you go to last
man stands, but they play their own rules.
If you go
it's like Paul walking past some backyard cricket and someone catches a ball, one hand, one bounce,
this
and he
is
goes,
good. Sorry,
I walk past a test match and they're playing one hand, one bounce now.
If I go to the website where the rules actually are, which Robert kindly pointed out. It's got AB de Villiers here explaining all of these. Is he not a real cricketer?
I'm not saying this competition's not real. I love Last Man Stands. I know some of them listen to the competition, but
Manners.
It is a cricket competition in Sydney and this happened.
This is called Can't Let It Go, but on this occasion, you need to let it go. We were wrong.
We weren't wrong.
We were wrong.
We weren't wrong.
Jaleesa was correct. Robert's niece was correct. It's a triviality whether it was great or not. We were saying it, you know, it just couldn't happen.
Cricket, Last Man Stands has its own rules.
I apologise and I retract all my statements and I bow to Jaleesa's greater wisdom and to Robert's niece's greater wisdom. And you should do the same.
I'd like an apology from Robert about not framing that question correctly. He said it was grade cricket. It's nowhere near grade cricket.
That's like saying, oh, well, 100 ball cricket isn't cricket.
No, it's like you walking past someone like playing cricket in the backyard and going,
this is an actual competition.
I'm not saying it's not an actual competition.
Eastern
but
Suburbs, Div 6. So what? Okay. What? So is
Div 6 in Last Man Stands. Not even Div 1 in Last Man Stands.
So is 100. So is. Well, obviously, they've got multiple divisions. It's a pretty good competition. So you know, like the 100 ball cricket. Is that not cricket, Menace?
No, but if.
Is that cricket?
But this is a different case altogether.
It is cricket. She was watching a cricket game.
My niece saw some Last Man Stands and there was a double play. I would have said, well, you never know because they play funky rules.
That is bullshit because I said that last week. I said maybe it was another form of cricket and you said, no, can't happen, happen.
Well.
So that's bullshit.
I think we're both right in our own ways. But, yeah, I'd like an apology from Robert about that question.
Go
all right, Paul, what's
I
your
love
can't
you,
let
Robert.
It go? Do you have another can't let it go or that's it? Just
yeah, I
bashing
did.
Manners.
I did. And, like, to be honest, I've completely forgotten. Oh, no, I know what my other can't let it go is. Yes, my other can't let it go was the departure. And this, honestly, I know we get, like, let's not be too New South Wales centric, but I'm going to be. The departure of Jodie Hawkins from the general manager role of the Sydney Sixers. She is leaving after a restructure and I just think it's a bit shit.
It is very, very, very sad.
She's taken them to back-to-back titles, the men's side, and she is very much loved by the players, as you could tell with Sean Abbott in his speech at the New South Wales Cricket Awards was praising her and just everything that she had done. And I just think it's not good optics. I mean, you had a female in a really high administrative role who had taken this team to two back-to-back titles and now she's not there. And I just think, well, not only did you have you had a female in that job, you had a female who was killing it in that job. And
bad look.
Yeah, I just thought it was a bad look and a really weird decision. And I wonder how this restructure's going to go. So that was really disappointing. My understanding is that, like, she was offered another job, but it wasn't quite, you know, as senior as that. And fair enough. Like, she should move on to bigger and better things, but disappointing.
Definitely. You need more female administrators, not less. Paul, your Can't Let It Go?
I didn't think we were doing them this week because in the notes it had been completely deleted and there was nothing there. And suddenly I get there and there's the printed copy and they're there. I have one though.
Usually it's deleted. It's caught short on this.
Yeah,
segment.
But normally you don't delete an entire segment.
But also in brackets you always have doesn't have to be every week. Yeah. And then when I don't do it, you're like, where is it?
This week he's deleted that whole section and then he's put it in at last minute. Anyway, mine is that cricket is inching again towards the Olympics. I've said it before, the Olympics shouldn't want cricket in there. Cricket shouldn't be in the Olympics because golf and tennis and those sports don't belong in there. But if the Olympics wants to have cricket, then yes, cricket should say yes. If you want us, we are in. I don't think there's any downside to it. Exposure, fun. And if it has to be T10 to make it palatable and quick, I'm all for that. So I'd love to see T10 cricket in the Olympics. And anyone who says, oh, it's not real cricket, whatever else, just look at the upside. You know, it's better to have cricket in the Olympics than not as far as cricket is concerned.
Definitely. Well, I'm on the same theme for my Can't Let It Go. The first one is cricket is back in the Commonwealth Games. And for the first time, it's women's cricket. So the Australian women's team has qualified for the 2022 Commonwealth Games in Birmingham. So that is very exciting. Paul and I will no doubt remember when Australia won silver medal.
98, Kuala Lumpur, South Africa won.
That's right.
I was very disappointed when we lost that final.
So was I. I bought into this whole thing about let's get a gold medal.
Yeah, for sure. And England didn't even play, did they?
No.
Yeah. It shows how much more Australia care about Commonwealth Games and Olympic Games than any other country in the world.
And my final Can't Let It Go, and on the Olympic theme, that they're renovating the Gabba. But there's a real, and they're doing this for the 2032 Olympics that Brisbane could host. There's a real concern now that they will actually remove the Gabba wicket and replace it with a drop-in pitch. So, that's a bit of a worrying issue because it's such a good cricket wicket. And what you don't want at the Gabba is a sort of a lifeless drop-in wicket.
Imagine if this has all been, the whole Brisbane bid has been secretly funded by the AFL. Out of Melbourne, just to get a drop-in wicket at the Gabba, just to make you upset.
An update, I'm going to the AFL on Saturday night, my first game in 25 years. So I'll probably run into Robert Fairhead there.
That's great.
Yep.
And when are you going to the NRL?
Pass.
What is it about the NRL?
It's just a bit of a slow game for me. It doesn't flow. Wait a minute.
Have you noticed that you follow cricket? Some people would say... Not me, but some people, about 7 billion, would say cricket is quite a slow game.
Well, I'll let you know next week how the AFL went. Jaleesa, what's happening for you in the next week?
Just lots of rugby league, not much cricket, but, yeah, just with 10. So.
Yep, if you're in Australia, you'll be able to catch Jaleesa on the news. Starts at 5 o'clock.
Channel 10.
Goes for an hour and a half.
Two sports hits.
Two sports hits.
Lots of sports to fill.
One thing that is happening for our Patreon subscribers, I just released a feature interview with Lisa Stelaker. Paul's releasing another Dennett deep dive in the next week. Next guest on Manners Masterclass is the one and only Greg Chappell.
So yeah, can't wait.
Lots
for that.
Happening. Head to our Patreon. It's patreon.com/cricketunfiltered. Jaleesa, have a great week. Paul, you too. And we'll be back next week with another show.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving at your desk, maybe at the gym, but you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach and see a rocket launch. Or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.